Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history.
This is a show that I did with Frederick the other day, and in the show I spoke about slavery and the emancipation of the blacks in America. There are many questions I'm starting to ask myself about America as I look at history. And as I dig into history and I'm looking at race and what people have done, America is starting to turn into a very interesting country that I'm starting to think about in all kinds of ways. And I'm asking myself many questions about American history and white Americans and how it was that things ended up the way that they are. So in this show, I spoke initially a bit about the Emancipation Proclamation and blacks and black Americans, because there are many parallels between South Africa and the USA. And one of the parallels between South Africa and the USA is how well the blacks in these regions were treated. The blacks in America have been given the greatest opportunities in the history of all black people. And then I ask myself the question, so what has come of this? And white South Africa, despite white South Africans, especially Boers, being demonized to high heaven, white South Africans actually gave blacks the best opportunities in all of Africa that any blacks in Africa ever had. People don't realize how backward the rest of Africa was and how hard it was for blacks in other black countries, because it was hard for the whites who lived in those countries too. Anyhow, then I also wanted to talk a bit about the election and the rigging of the 2020 election, because I'm very concerned as to whether we're going to see some huge rigging in the 2024 election. By the time you see this video, we'll already know the results. And that is why I put out that video about the huge election rig of 2020, because it was enormous. And I don't see any reason why something huge can't be done again by the Jews. The Jews are capable of it. The question is, how awake is Donald Trump, etc.? I thought I'd show you some very quick headlines, because election rigging is a big thing in Africa. We've had elections being rigged left, right, and center in flipping 9 out of 10 countries in Africa. The election rigging is so flipping blatant in some cases, you won't believe how blatant it can be. And even in South Africa itself, there are things that we've asked and things that are bizarre. And I used to write about election rigging in South Africa from the first, from 1994. I've spoken about the election rigging when Rhodesia became Zimbabwe, and literally every single election after Rhodesia, every single election after Rhodesia, right to the present time. I'm telling you, there's not an election in Zimbabwe that hasn't been rigged right from the beginning, right up to this day, without exception. In South Africa, due to whites being around, it's probably more controlled now, and so the results are more or less okay. But 1994 was definitely rigged. There was rigging going on in 1994. What I quickly want to show you are just a few graphics, just a little bit out of my archive. I could do an entire video on just election rigging in South Africa and Zimbabwe. Just these two countries, I could do an entire flipping video on just election rigging one after the other. To the point where in Zimbabwe, all the blacks know, everybody knows that all elections are rigged. They all know it. They know it and they can't stop it. It's that bad. So there on the bottom left is just one of the election rigging points that went out back in 2008 in Zimbabwe. The Zimbabwe election of 2008 was actually rigged by a Jewish company in South Africa. It was rigged by a Jewish company in South Africa, yeah? And it was actually spotted by the British. The British actually published and warned about it. They actually published all the details about how it was going to be rigged, and they even explained that Robert Mugabe, had paid a South African company something like about $8 million or something to rig the election. It was 8 million. Not sure if it was 8 million rand or $8 million, but it was something like that. I've got all the details in my old archive. And this was a thing that was put out by a group called Zimbabwe Democracy Now. And it says, is the Zimbabwe election 2008 about to be stolen? Don't accept a rigged result in Zimbabwe. Let me tell you, Zimbabwe came to the edge of a civil war and the, let's call it the good blacks, flinched and lost. They flinched and they lost and that was that. Because the bad guys were starting to kill them, okay? And that is how it goes. It eventually comes down to that kind of thing. On the top right, you can see The Citizen, a supposedly conservative newspaper in South Africa. The Citizen published this story. I can't remember in which year. I can't see the detail. But The Citizen published this article and it said, ANC in ID book, it's probably ID book scam or something. Hundreds of documents handed out by the party during the elections. That's one of the claims. So I think they were handing out freaking faked ID books to people, something like that, so that they could go and vote because you need an ID book. And they may probably have handed out ID books, maybe even allowing people to vote multiple times. That's how election rigging is done in Africa. They freaking rig it so obviously, so openly. In many elections, they've just had boxes and boxes of votes just pouring in and they just open the boxes and all the votes in the box are for one political party and off you go. So rigging elections, lying about it, conning people about elections, big old game here in Africa. And off you go. And it looks to me like American presidential elections are becoming more third world. We will see in 2024 whether things are any better than they were in 2020. Trump has had all his chances to try and figure this out. And if Trump is not a hard man, if Trump is not hard, he's not going to be able to win. Because you got to be hard and strong and tough, okay? And if you're not as hard as nails, you could just be cheated. You could be cheated in 3 seconds flat. So we will know shortly what the situation is. To me, I'm recording this on the morning of the 5th of November of the 2024 election. And I just want to tell you that I wrote a little note to people and I'm just going to read you the note that I wrote. I wrote the note earlier today and published it on African Crisis. At the time that I'm recording it, it's about 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time in the USA. So I wrote this. Good morning, folks. I wish white Americans good luck today. In the next 24 to 48 hours, we'll know the results and we'll know whether any shenanigans went on. I see today as white America versus Jews. White America wants Trump equals MAGA. White America sees Harris as dumb as a brick. They don't want to be ruled by an evil fool. The demented, anti-white, hate-filled, paranoid Jewish mind will see Trump as white patriarchy. Even if Trump wants to nuke Iran, Jewish support for him will be lukewarm at best. Jews will insanely love Harris. They see only positives. Female, non-white. Proof the USA is going non-white. They will love Harris like they loved Nelson Mandela. A few Jews might vote or support Trump, but the Jewish heart will go all out for Harris. She's married to a Jew too. We'll see in the coming days which side won. Good luck. So we'll know sooner or later what's come of this, whether white Americans still have some kind of control in this election. Because the vast majority of white Americans, from what I can see, regardless of Trump's flaws and weaknesses, they see Trump as the only thing that's even slightly positive in the election farce. Regarding the show that I did with Frederick, we actually had quite a bunch of interesting things that came up. And then later, Frederick's Skype crashed and I had to jump in and do some talking. and I did quite a bit of talking about the rigged election of 2020. We spoke about other interesting things like IQ and especially the American Lothrop Stoddard. We also discussed Stephen Goodson, the South African, and we talked a lot about race. So there was a bunch of stuff that we discussed. It was a good show. It was a fun show, and we got a lot done. So here is the show, and I hope you enjoy it.
When I was a little boy around the table at home, I remember very well when company would come. I would have to be right still until the whole crowd ate. My mama always said to me, Jim, take a tater and wait. Now taters never did taste good with chicken on the plate, but I had to eat them just the same. That is why I look so bad and have these puny ways, because I always had to take an old cold tater and wait.
Alrighty, it is Saturday, November 2nd, 2024, and time for another edition of Blackbird Mine's Saturday Snack Shack. Hope everyone's having a wonderful Saturday and a wonderful weekend. Tonight's episode is episode 9-8 and is entitled Noticing Patterns with Mr. Jan Lambrecht 5. And so we're very pleased to have our good friend Jan back to finish up. He's talking about his research in his latest documentary on the uncivil war of the United States and the Confederacy. So we're glad we could get him back to finish up. We ran out of time last week when he was on a few months back. But anyway, so pleased to have him tonight. A quick shout out to apologies for all the sound problems the last few shows. Unfortunately, apparently RBN's got some mixer problem and some other things that basically comes down to, sure would be nice if we had some money so we could upgrade some equipment so we could get the quality of the sound back on our shows. So I apologize for the rough sound the last couple of shows, but apparently the mixer loves to kind of freak out and go to peak red levels when my show comes on. But anyway, so shout out also to all my rowdy friends down at the Dixie Republican Travelers Rest South Kakalaki for hosting the show last Saturday and for putting on the Fall for Dixie Autumn Festival. Thanks for all the great Southern hospitality. Had a great time. Long day, but it was a good day. Got to drive through the I-40 area, I-26. That's some of the hardest hit areas of North Carolina, and the amount of devastation was a bit overwhelming. But once I got to the Dixie Republic, had a great time. And not to mention, able to do a lot of my Christmas shopping early. Lots of great gifts and stocking stuffers there at the Dixie Republic, especially the new line of Hurricane Helene and FEMA t-shirt designs. So be sure to check that out and support all the RBN sponsors. But had a great time at the Dixie Republic last Saturday, so thanks again. Now, for the newbies, Mr. Jan Lambrecht hosts the AfricanCrisis.info site and the History Reviewed websites, as well as being a Breakfast Club Pathfinder, and he's been working with a crew for a long time, telling us what's really going on in South Africa versus what Mockingbird and academia has been telling us has been going on in South Africa and also Rhodesia/Zimbabwe. So we're very pleased to have him back. For the newbies, we'll open up the phone lines after the bottom of the hour break so you can call in and tell us what you want to talk about. And that's Republic Broadcasting, RBN, because you can handle the truth. To come on the air, you can call in at 512-248-8252. That's 512-248-8252, or toll free 800-313-9443. That's 1-800-313-9443. And as always, you can come out to the chat room at bb9tradingposts.chatango.com. That's bb9tradingposts.chatango.com for the hottest news, the dankest memes, and the best tips on independent living, come out to bb9tradingpost.chitango.com. The sun never sets on the North Kakalaki Trading Post chat room, but if you're looking for a knife fight, we just assume you go somewhere else. Now, I wonder what Mr. Jan Lambrecht wants to talk about tonight. The weather, fortunately for those of us in hurricane-ravaged Appalachian Mountains, the temperatures went back up above freezing at night and into the 70s Fahrenheit during the day while we dig out and reset our homes, while every minute being bombarded with offers to buy our land from out-of-state companies for Globo, Homo, Inc., Vanguard, and BlackRock. It's a bit irritating. Wish you would quit pestering us. No means no. So anyway, the Elk Report, the official North Kakalaki Elk Spotter Report, EX96, that's Echo X-Ray 96 reporting, no elk spotted on Blackjack Mountain today. Repeat, no elk spotted on Blackjack Mountain today. Now, Atma and I went to early vote for the first time on Friday over in the new Blowing Rock, complete with its own pride flag on Main Street to match New Boone, of course. Well, as we approached the American Legion Hall where the early voting was going on, I noticed I didn't see any elk, nor did I see any of the insufferable blue-haired feminist activist useful idiot foot soldiers for Pam's Picks. This election handing out their ballot recommendations for all the Marxist fifth columnists to copy. For longtime listeners of the show, y'all know all about commie carpetbagger self-declared progressive community organizer Pam and her political coven operating here in Watauga County to fix us with progressive values. Heritage Appalachia folks always offer up a pro tip. Read what Pam says and then vote the opposite of everything she recommends. I wonder if her radicalized App State NPCs were hiding from me and Atma this year, like the elk are apparently doing. This includes the North Kakalaki Wildlife Resource Commission elk spotter transmission. Or maybe he wanted to weigh in on the big ongoing Watauga County debate on which was more hateful, angry black men from Atlanta, Tobias M. Jones, going on a Mad Max terror rampage against white drivers in his semi-tractor-trailer truck in New Boone, echo, 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 or some kid waving a swastika flag near the Carpetbagger Synagogue of Satan clubhouse. Or maybe he'll want to weigh on the new big ongoing Appalachia debate on whether Hurricane Helene was tragic but organic act of God or a strategic synthetic act of war by those playing God on this planet who don't believe in things like private property, independent living, and white Christians having the right to be left alone in their mountain homes. Or maybe he'll want to talk about those heroes doing the impossible in western North Kakalaki and eastern Tennessee. If Donald Trump is reelected, he should recruit the Cajun Navy to replace FEMA under the budget oversight of Elon Musk and Dr. Ron Paul, of course, with the first order of business to see that those linemen up there risking life and limb in 16-hour shifts plus actually get paid, please. Unbelievable, these chicken swinger bean counters are holding back these linemen's paychecks. Please pay them. Or maybe he'll want to talk about U.S. President Joe Biden calling half the country garbage and then going out for a Halloween photo op with First Lady Jill Biden dressed up as a panda. As pandas have nothing really to do with Halloween, we folks who know all about the tales of the three laptops, the laptops of Anthony Weiner, Seth Rich, and Hunter Biden, you have to really question the choice of costume considering what panda eyes mean in the Pizzagate Jeffrey Epstein world. Or maybe he'll want to talk about the epic battle in the Commonwealth of Virginia to keep unauthorized people from voting in the Virginia elections. Why does the Department of Just Us, echo, 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 have such a problem with this other than Virginia might elect more straight white folks if the elections are fair and not flooded with illegal voters? Or maybe he'll want to talk about Kamala Harris's vice presidential running mate's curious political strategy to appear more manly in the eyes of men that know now that he can't load a shotgun by calling Elon Musk gay. Curious. or he'll want to talk about U.S. political prisoner and former Trump insider Mr. Steve Bannon getting released from prison just days before the presidential election. I wonder what he'll have to say about his time in the chicken shack. Or maybe he'll want to talk about beloved social media celebrity Peanut the Squirrel being captured and executed by the New York Cheka Environmental Control under the command of head chicken swinger, squirrel, and raccoon killer Sean Mehar. Echo, echo, echo. Funny how the Talmud strictly prohibits hunting for wild food, but executing political prisoners and innocent furry creatures is perfectly kosher. Rest in peace, Peanut the Squirrel and Fred the Raccoon. You will be avenged. Or maybe he'll want to talk about Israel getting caught yet again running spying and blackmail operations against Italian Prime Minister Maloney and other senior Italian officials. The Israeli Mossad and Unit 269, bully, bribe, blackmail, banish, and bury. Every single time, every single country. Or maybe he'll just want to talk about fishing. So welcome back to the Snack Shack, Mr. Jan Lambrecht, and tell us, good sir, what do you want to talk about tonight?
Hi there, Frederick. It's an honor to be back on your show. Thank you very much for having me back here. I have got quite a few things I want to talk about, so let me just dive in quickly. I just want to finish up on some stuff that I was saying last time that I just want to reiterate a bit more this time. One of the things that I, you know, because I live in Africa, I have a good grasp of black politics in Africa and how the blacks function in Africa. But little by little, I'm starting to look at blacks who live outside Africa. And I've been looking South America's history and how they got their independence and when they got it. But then another thought that I've been sitting and pondering are the black Americans. And the thing that I just want to quickly hit on is the Emancipation Proclamation that occurred during the Uncivil War. Because when I was looking at the military side of things, to me, it seemed that the whole Emancipation Proclamation was clearly driven by military failures of the Union Army when facing Robert E. Lee and the Army of Northern Virginia. And the original first proclamation came out in September, which was just a couple of months after the 7 days battles where they had been driven away from Richmond. And when I look at the timing and the wording of the Emancipation Proclamation, the whole thing strikes me as being done by Lincoln genuinely fearing that the Confederacy is going to win, that he can see his army, despite having so much weaponry, so many men, so much better equipment, etc., that it's going to get its ass kicked by the South. And the actual wording, the finer part of the wording of the Emancipation Proclamation, just reeks of a very specific thing that he wants to do. You know, when he says that the slaves he's freeing are not the slaves in the Union states, they are the slaves in his enemies, in the Confederate states. And it specifically refers to only freeing the slaves in the states that have rebelled. And, you know, when I look at that whole Emancipation Proclamation, the whole thing is clearly rigged to have one goal, to cause the Confederate economy to collapse, to hopefully start racial conflict in the South, to hopefully get blacks in the South to kill whites, and if not to successfully kill whites, to run away and join the Union Army. And the blacks in the Union Army were not allowed to have weapons, until the Emancipation Proclamation. And at that point, then blacks were encouraged to join the Union Army, and they were given weapons. You know, when I look at the whole thing, it's really a disgusting thing to start a racial conflict in order to save the North, because their army their professional army is actually so freaking useless. But then I also sit and ask myself some questions about blacks in general and their freedom, because those blacks that were freed in the Confederacy and also those in other states, those blacks were, quote, slaves. And like I mentioned last time, it's not that different to us having cheap labor in Africa, which we still do. We still have quite a bit of that still going even now. But one of the things that I've thought about quite a lot is blacks in Africa have only been, quotes, free for 60 or more years, whereas blacks in America have been free for almost 160 years. And then I sit and ask myself a question, you know, I look at the way white Americans have accommodated these people, and there's no question at all that blacks in America have had the greatest opportunities, the best treatment of any blacks on the planet, period. Regardless of what happened, you know, in other ways. They have had more opportunities than any other black people on the planet. They've lived among whites who have lifted them up, who have actually paid a whole bunch of their bills in order to keep them going when they're not really functioning. And a question that I ask myself is, what comes from 160 years of black freedom when blacks have been given every opportunity imaginable? And, you know, I'm not that impressed when I see how they've behaved. And in recent decades, you know, when we had the fighting here in Southern Africa with Rhodesia and the Portuguese and all that, one of the things that happened was that blacks in America were always ready at any point in time to push the black African agenda in the U.S. Congress, in U.S. politics, etc. No matter what harebrained, pro-communist, anti-white thing that blacks in Africa wanted, the blacks in North America were all happy with that and they helped to push that. Whereas one would have expected that if those blacks in America had, you know, more than a century of freedom at the time that these blacks in Africa got their freedom, one would have expected those blacks to have shown some appreciation towards whites in general, thanks to the way that white Americans treated them. One would have thought that they would have shown some kind of superior knowledge and wisdom that they could have granted to the blacks in Africa to say to them, hey, don't do that crazy stuff, don't kill the whites, don't go for communism, etc. And you know what? I don't see anything that indicates that those blacks, after they got their freedom, that there is a lot for them to show of what they've actually done. Because there is no place in the world where blacks had so much opportunity and assistance and were so well integrated in a Western country than the United States. And I kind of walk away with the view that, you know what, that all that liberalism and well-meaning treatment didn't achieve much. And in Africa, we have the same problem with South Africa. You may hear all the screeching and howling about white South Africans treating black South Africans dreadfully and all the evils of apartheid. But the reality is that South Africa was the only country in Africa that was a first world nation. And if you look at the lives of black South Africans in South Africa during apartheid, which was basically just segregation, if you look at their lives, you look at the quality of their lives, how they lived, the opportunities they had despite the segregation, they
had a better time in Africa than all the rest of the blacks who lived in much poorer colonies. There were far fewer whites who couldn't carry the blacks. And you know, for me, when I look at it, the black South Africans as well, they were treated far better than the rest of the blacks in Africa. And honestly, when I look at them, I walk away and I say to myself, that also didn't achieve much. That also didn't achieve much. So those are just some thoughts that I've had. And I'm still digging and just thinking, but those were just some thoughts that I had on this matter. That to me, it's as if liberalism was a failure with blacks wherever it was tried. That's what I want to say.
And yeah, that goes back to the old nature versus nurture argument. And there was such an optimism in that, you know, Enlightenment period that you could take anyone and provide a good nurturing environment and you will get the same result. So it's like you take any seed, put it in magic soil, and you're going to get a bountiful harvest for the seed, no matter what seed got put in that magical soil. And that is not the case. And this is about race realism. And, you know, I went through public education, government education, after the Civil Rights Act in the United States, where, you know, the Hart-Keller Act, where basically it was a Jewish clergy plan being implemented. They knew, you know, what they were doing, but yet they, you know, gave this big thing about equality and, you know, we're all the same. It's just cosmetic differences, but, you know, mentally, physically, you know, basically we're all the same. There's only one race, the human race, and there could be nothing further from the truth. And this was the IQ realism, the EQ and the emotional quotient, and the TQ, the temporal quotient, your ability to deal with time. And there is a biological difference between the races, and you can throw money at it all you want, and it's never going to change. And this was one of the things about the U.S. education system. They just dumped so much money into the black community, and what does it have to show for it other than the elite of the black community turning out to be, you know, globo homo gangster rapists like P. Diddy. You know, it's like, okay, so these are supposedly the pinnacles of black success. P. Diddy, you know, Sean Combs, you know, what was her name? Oprah Winfrey, you know, and, you know, they're just all these people that have been propped up by Jewish money, but there's, you know, there's no substance there. These, you know, you're always going to get that culture out of this, no matter how much money you throw at it. And I think that's the thing that white people and their pathological altruism have such a problem with is the boomers, I guess, just refuse to give up that dream of, you know, the great kumbaya sing-along of, you know, a post-racial world. And what we have now is a mess, and, you know, their children and grandchildren, you know, the systems that they're going in, that, you know, now you, these schools are just prison warfare zones. And both, you know, the teachers and the students are alike are at risk of being attacked at any minute in these jungles. We have destroyed our once beautiful cities. I think of North Carolina when I was a child, and, you know, cities like Raleigh, our capital city, Charlotte, Wilmington, Greensboro, Winston, Asheville were all still white cities. My mother could take small children and go shopping in these cities by herself, and it was never a thing. You know, the idea of a woman taking small children into these cities to shop now would be, you know, just foolhardy, right? And this is the reality, but everybody keeps saying that we've made so much progress with racial justice, and but we just need more. And now you hear more talk about reparations, that, you know, oh, they've suffered more than anybody else. Like, they refuse to acknowledge that blacks in America own slaves. Blacks in Africa still own slaves, but yet this has been singled out as a particular sin against white people, and ignoring the fact that the majority of the slave industry then, like it's always been and probably always will be, is Jewish interests. You know, the Jewish slave ships, the slave markets, the plantations that had the majority of slaves, the households that had slaves. Those were majority Jewish. Christian culture doesn't do slavery. Unfortunately, Christian culture thinks that they can save anybody and bring up anybody to Western civilization standards with their philosophy. And unfortunately, you know, the churches have seen this bitter harvest of all this pouring into these communities, and what do they have to show for it for all these years? So that's some of my observations of what you're, you know, talking about. So please carry on.
Yeah, Frederick, I totally agree with everything you said there. And by the way, when you talk about Christianity can save everybody, oh, let me not even get started. You have no idea how much missionary work has gone on in Africa. Whites in Africa went to other parts of Africa, spent their lives teaching blacks, helping blacks, teaching them to read, saving their lives with medicine, etc. There are quite a number of instances where those blacks later killed the very people, the very Christians who had come to save them and help them. And there were Christians from inside Africa who did this. There were Christians from America, Christians from Europe who did this. Many of them ended up dead.
And eaten.
Well, I must tell you, it's so disgusting. All attempts at liberalism and this stuff does not work. I was busy reading a book from America by a guy called Lothrop Stoddard, and it was a book that he wrote in the 1920s about the threat of the underman. And in his book from the 1920s, he talks about IQ, he talks about DNA, not quite DNA, he doesn't call it DNA, but he's basically talking about the same concept before that term came out. And you know, he it's so amazing to find that 100 years later, all the same rubbish is still being put out there. Lothrop Stoddard was writing that people were talking about the fact that the environment, if you give them the right environment and the right opportunities, that will be good for them, and then you'll get the same result. And it was the whole IQ issue as well. And he was bringing out example after example after example about IQ studies. Some of the most intensive IQ studies ever done were done by the United States military. They tested people in every conceivable freaking way. Oh, and by the way, Lothrop Stoddard pointed out, listen to this, that there were illiterate hillbillies, illiterate white hillbillies, right, from your part of the world. And when their IQs were tested, they had some of the highest IQs in the United States. And he was bringing all these things out, and I was looking at it and saying, good Lord, this is 100 years ago, and all the same garbage is going on as if we've learned nothing. But of course, you and I know, we know Jews are pushing this stuff like crazy. And that's why I bet you the Jews want to see that useless, moronic, fool, dumb as a plank, Kamala Harris, run your country. That is the perfect kind of thing that they would like to see happen in this election. And I am following your election with great interest. I put out a video a week ago using that Time magazine article about the Jew who rigged the 2020 election against Donald Trump, Michael Podhorzer.
All right, we're getting ready to go on a break, so hold that thought. You are listening to Blackbird 9 Saturday Snack Shack. I'm your host, Frederick C. Blackburn, and our special guest this evening is Mr. Jan Lambrecht from South Africa, and we're talking about the race realism in the Uncivil War and comparing it to what's going on in South Africa since the apartheid days, right? Anyway, we will be back after these messages.
The truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Well, hello, folks. This is Mike Gatti, the rebel madman at Republic Broadcasting Network. If you are searching for your inner rebel, it can be found at the Dixie Republic. It's the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to thedixierepublic.com to view all of their Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through their extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in their Johnny Reb gun and leather shop. Now remember, DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
I'm so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork raised the way nature intended.
Got a hole in it. I can't buy no beer. Well, I'm standing on the corner with a bucket in my hand. I'm waiting for a woman. It ain't got no man, 'cause my bucket's got a hole in it. Yeah, my bucket's got a hole in it. Yeah, my bucket's got a hole in it. I can't buy no beer. Well, I went up on the mountain. I looked down in the sea.
I seen the crabs and the fishes doing the bebop because my book has got a hole in it. Yeah, my book has got a hole in it. Yeah, my book has got a hole in it. I can't buy no beer. Of me working so hard when I got a woman in the boss man's yard. Cause my bucket's got a hole in it. Yeah, my bucket's got a hole in it. Yeah, my bucket's got a hole in it. I can't buy no beer.
Well, I see that there's some problems with Frederick's Skype at the moment. So let me just say a few other things. When I did that video about the US election of 2020, with everybody sitting and talking about how there was no election rigging, I went and grabbed not only the entire Time magazine article, but I also went and found other stuff that other people had written. There were other organizations that had also spoken about the fact that the election was rigged and that the Time magazine article showed that there was something very bizarre going on. And the whole issue revolved around mail-in ballots, and the key architect that they said was behind this was a guy called Michael Podhorzer of AFL-CIO, and he's Jewish. And the article that was written in Time magazine was actually written by a Jewish journalist, and the article boasted about how much money they had, all the things that they pulled off, and how they came to, quotes, save the election. But saving the election basically meant seeing to it that Joe Biden wins at all costs. And there were some very interesting points that came out of that article when you go through it in detail. And there were even other organizations, like even Gatestone Institute. Even Gatestone Institute said, what the heck is this thing about the election, about the fact that you needed high-powered people to come along, and these high-powered people are plowing money into this and doing all sorts of things in order to, quote, save America's democracy. So the whole thing was very, very weird. Anyone who looked at it realized that there's something huge going on here. So I don't know if Frederick is back. If not, then I'll just carry on. So when I went through that stuff, I found another small organization that had done a video. I could only find one video on the whole of YouTube that actually still is up, and it still tells you the election was rigged, and it also pointed at the Time magazine article, and it also asked questions. It said, what the hell was this Time magazine article so proud about? The fact that all these people are busy changing laws, they are doing 101 different things, and, you know, questions that I ask myself is, hold on, but white Americans have been doing democracy and holding elections for more than 200 years, 240 years or so, and why do they need some kind of assistance nowadays in order to have somebody help them? Like, don't white Americans know how to count? Is that what they're saying? The whole thing was so weird the way it was written. And here they are. Here are the very crooks who rigged the election, and they are so freaking proud of having rigged the presidential election. And then after...
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Are you back?
Oh, I am back. That was a lot of fun. My apologies. Thanks for jumping in. My apologies to the RBN producer. I don't know what happened with the Skype. It just the whole screen just went white. And I couldn't get back, and I tried to connect to my laptop, but you couldn't hear me, so okay. Please carry on. But yes, you're talking about, you know, how this was carried out despite all the evidence, all the facts, those hate facts, and, you know, at what point will people, you know, look at the reality of this rather than their virtue signaling, you know, I want to be seen as a good person. Oh my gosh, please don't call me a racist. Please don't call me this. Please don't call me names. And it's that white European Achilles heel that we are so vulnerable to those shame spells and guilt spells that these other races really don't have a problem with, especially chicken swingers. But for us, you know, that's the worst thing ever, is some authority figure telling us that we have been bad, that we're thinking the wrong way, we're feeling the wrong way, we're believing our lying eyes versus the propaganda they want us to believe. So please continue.
Well said, well said. And I want to tell you that when I went through that article and made that video, there were some things in there that really hit me, that to me screamed election fraud. The one thing was that this Michael Podhorser, the Jew behind this whole thing, he kept saying to people that as long as all the votes are counted, we will win. The Democrats will win. And he kept saying it that way, like, if all the votes are counted, we will win. And I'm like, what the hell are you actually saying there? Because to me, it sounds, when I look at that closely, to me it sounds like what he's saying is, we're going to keep pumping out the junk votes. We're going to keep on rigging this thing and sending out, you know, let's call it all these mail-in ballots and things. And we will carry on doing it until we have won, because that is what it like basically boiled down to. And there were things in there that really looked so freaking dodgy. And anyone with half a brain who looked at that article, that article is weird, man.
And the thing is, the mentality is we're going to keep having elections until we get the one we want. And then there won't be any more elections, right? But, you know, it's that idea of when democracy doesn't go in their favor, then suddenly it's a completely invalid procedure and you have to throw it out and do it over with modifications. And that means letting more people that are going to vote our way into the voting pool. And that's the big thing. This is just a zero-sum game of, if you have more people that are against your group, your white group, you're going to win in a democratic system. Yeah, that's what the flaw of the Bob rule of democracy is all about. It's just that, you know, setting the majority against the minority. And that people just keep saying that we have to protect our democracy. And it's, you know, you're using this democracy to completely undermine every nation in the world, especially the white civilization nations. And I always go back to the Ezra Pound quote of, democracies are now referred to as countries that Jews control in Europe. You know, that's the thing, is a democracy is something that Jews are controlling both sides and rigging it the way they want. And that's why we supposedly had a republic. But, you know, now they say it's a democracy, right? So please carry on.
Yeah. And I don't know if there's a caller waiting there, but I must tell you, you know, when they boast about all the things that they did, including changing laws in states, getting all kinds of people to participate in this way and that way, they even pointed out that they aren't going to argue with people and debate things. they had a strategy that whenever they see something that they don't like, that they'll just outright get that organization to censor it, because any kind of debating doesn't work. That huge Time article was filled with all kinds of absolutely bizarre things in it that you know, that must be the greatest election rigging in the history of America. There could never have been anything on as big a scale as this.
But there was, Ed, I love you, our local champions of democracy out of state. Adams Publishing, Echo, 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 owned Watauga Democrat. The champions of democracy and every voice must be heard have banned me for years across every one of their platforms. The entire Adams Publishing line I am forbidden from commenting on, but they're champions of inclusivity and every voice must be heard, except for mine, of course. So, Mr. Producer, can we have Mr. Lark in Texas? Lark, are you there, sir?
I am. How are you, gents?
Greetings. Good to hear from you. I haven't talked to you in a while.
Great. It's nice to hear Jan as well. I just want to point out, gentlemen, that, you know, what's missing from this narrative controlled by big media today is the things that we were discussing in years past, going back to Bush v. Gore in the year 2000 and in that election. Remember, we had well regarded books like Vote Scam and Black Box Voting. You know, the Collier brothers and Bev Harris, et cetera, come out. Well, this is indicative of the fact that these people want this world run via a machine. And we can't ever dismiss that from the narrative, because this is what it's all about. That's why you see these big tech firms, you know, that are dominating the Wall Street, you know, Forbes 400, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, I want to ask you, Jan, there's a gentleman, a black gentleman, who goes by the name of King. It was all in the papers in South Africa, but it was oftentimes shunted aside to the fringes and to the back pages, who claimed to be and his supporters claimed that he was the only legitimate African monarch in that part of the world. Do you remember his name?
What, you mentioned a name, but it didn't ring a bell. What was the name?
I don't know. That's why I'm asking you.
Oh,
his name is
oh.
King. He has a title. He's a king.
Well, it's not Cornelius of the Lenten, is he? Yeah. He was actually on the show. He was on the Breakfast Club a long time ago. Yeah.
I think I know what you're talking about. This is the guy. I think he was from the Cape, and he was representing the Cape. And they were linking up with some whites, and they were trying to do some kind of secession. But
right, the Good Hope Project, that was the
secede
from South Africa and form Good Hope with his tribe. So it was a white-black collaboration, and went all the way to the UN. I remember when Miss Karen Smith was running that to the UN, and everything was legal, but it didn't go with their agenda, and so it completely kind of just got lost in committee. And so that was a sad part of that, but they worked really hard with the Good Hope Project.
I know a bit about that, and I must tell you, I wouldn't take that guy too seriously. It was a guy in the Cape, and he was a colored guy, and he was part of a little group there, but Nobody in South Africa would take that thing seriously. Like, we have got a Zulu king, for example, and everybody understands the Zulus and the Zulu lineage. This guy was someone who came out of nowhere, and some whites were working with him, and nobody in South Africa really took that seriously. I didn't take it too seriously myself.
Let me make note that what they are pushing, given the language, the choice of language that they're employing, is just like Michael Challenger and the Ubuntu Party. They're promoting communitarianism. I just want to point that out. I know nobody wants to hear it on this network, but I know.
I want to hear it. I agree with you.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been studying this for 20 years, and I'm telling you right now, that guy was backed by the Jews, and he was there. He was inserted into the political narrative in the discussion on your newspaper, in your newspapers, to advance the communitarian agenda in South Africa, along with people like Michael Tellinger, who's probably a dupe, as well as the King guy, But
if I may say something, I have looked a bit at Michael Tellinger's work, and I got to tell you, that's a guy that I don't take seriously at all. He's a guy who loves doing things for publicity, and he'll do all kinds of things, but the reality is he'll do things that aren't really going to work for us, for the whites of South Africa. And he's just busy playing his games. I don't regard him as an important player. If anything's going to happen in South Africa that's going to have meaning, it's going to come from the Afrikaner community, from the Boers. They are the ones, if anything happens in South Africa that's going to be big and is going to be important, it will only happen when the Boers decide to make it happen one day. Michael Tellinger, I really don't think much of his academic stuff and the things he says. He's just a guy looking for publicity. And you got to understand something about Africa and our situation is we've got violent blacks as enemies. These blacks are dangerous. And you're not going to come there with some kind of little Ubuntu party and then everyone's going to sit around the fire and sing Kumbaya. Those blacks are going to come and they're going to kill the other blacks. And if you're going to do anything in South Africa, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough and hard, and people are going to have to be armed. Because big things, I can tell you, there's going to be bloodletting. There's no other way.
All right. Larkin, last thing before we let you go.
You're spot on about this,
they want everything thought out by a machine, the AI in charge of everything you do. They don't want a free will society, they want a post-free will society, so you're spot on with that. So anyway, you have a great weekend, thanks for calling. Mr. Producer, can we have Michigan Mitch, please? Michigan Mitch, are you there, sir?
Hey, fellas.
Hey.
Nelson Mandela not nationalized the diamond mines? Right, and I'm sure there's gold in them there hills and silver, and of course we can't forget West African cacao. Well, why didn't the good old Nelsie nationalize that for the entire African populace? And next, speaking of that, South Africa, how about Stephen Mitford Goodson, who authored A Superstellar Scholarship by the title, A History of Central Banking and the Enslavement of Mankind. A History of Central Banking and the Enslavement of Mankind. Deanna Spingola, who used to be with RBN, interviewed him, 2012, I believe it is. It's on BitChute. And it's an astonishing revelation from this man and his scholarship. And the other one I want to bring into focus is modern money mechanics. That everybody should be delving into that big time. I'm bringing this up because Lark is the professor of communitarianism. Okay. Well, how about let's establish an anti-communitarian database that will empower with liberatingly and enlightening knowledge sources like I just cited. There's another one called Corporate Suretyship. Robert Crist, C-R-I-S-T, Corporate Suretyship. I first learned about that from Clint Richardson, who used to be with RBN. We are the surety collateral. Speaking of corporate suretyship, if we are endowed with a Social Security number and thereby a Social Security trust a.k.a. the Sestiquivi Legal Person Estate Trust, then we are the surety collateral for all the floating rate notes, FRNs, floating rate notes. Okay. And that's why when I saw this guy, let's see, YouTube channel Jack Boston, it's called the Federal Reserve Act 1913 Remedy in Law, or it might be Common Law Remedy. This guy in 1978, David Merrill, as a law student at Georgetown or George Washington, he literally prosecuted successfully the Federal Reserve Board. I can guarantee you, not Lark, not anybody else has ever heard of that. I've brought it up in the past. Nobody wants to jaw about. Let's jaw about anti-communitarian endeavors, scholarship. As I just
Jan, you want to address that?
Yes. Okay. The question
you asked.
We're
about to run out of time. We got a couple more callers.
Goodson from South Africa. He is top quality. I've bought all his books, and I even had a bit of contact with him myself. The only book that he wrote that I totally disagree with is his book about Ian Smith of Rhodesia. Otherwise, all the rest of his books are excellent. As for Nelson Mandela and his nationalization, I've done videos about Nelson Mandela and the Jews, and that Nelson Mandela is a Jewish creation. That's why he did not touch anything of the rich, because he and the Jews are in on the same side. And all these things that we've been talking about, it's only the whites everywhere that are getting kicked in the teeth.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay, carry on, fellas.
All right. Thanks for calling. Great data points. Great book reference. I'll have to listen to the archive and write those down. As far as an anti-communitarian collection of books, the Colshire collection, and I was trying to find his site, but I'll post it in the chat room later. But there is a guy who's been on the show that is collecting all these alternative banking type texts, to the anti-communitarian, if you will. So there are, you know, collections of material out there. I'll post that in the chat when I find it. Okay, Mr. Producer, can we have Brendan in Massachusetts, please? Mr. Brendan, and be quick, we're about to run out of time.
Yes, I think the solution is very simple. Non-fiscal allegiance. Every April 15th, federal and or state taxes, depending on where you live, you simply don't pay. If that is a collective non-fiscal allegiance, the whole system breaks down and we can start building up.
Mr. Jan, not paying taxes, what do you say?
Let me tell you, people are going to have to push back in every single way you can. Here in South Africa, we were forced to pay TV licenses. In South Africa, we all hated it. We hardly used it. And do you know, eventually 82% of the South African population stopped paying TV licenses. And the state broadcaster is literally bankrupt. So, yes, we've already started going down paths like that. And we did the same. We did the same with tolls on roads. People stopped paying tolls to those companies. In the end, people are going to have to push back in whatever way they can.
All right. We are out of time, Brendan.
Stop payment means a...
Continue, Brendan. Oh. All right. We lost Brendan. So anyway, Mr. Jan Lambert, thank you so much for coming on the show tonight. Always a pleasure. You have been listening to Blackbird 9 Saturday Snack. I'm your host, Frederick C. Blackburn. I hope everyone has a wonderful weekend. And until next time, I will see you all at the rendezvous.
Tom Bolton for Ease Off. I know so many of you are finding our Easy 4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation, but today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio. Only on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Thank you very much for listening today. I hope that you learned something new today. Look after yourselves and take care. We'll be chatting again soon.
Give up, my friend. If you don't see the end, if you don't see the top, don't stop. We know you'll win every fight.